Welcome to episode 16 of the Golf Betting System podcast. We're talking this week Honda Classic on the PGA Tour and the Qatar Open on the European Tour. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. I am Steve Bamford, PGA Tour previewer at Golf Betting System. And with me, I've got the our two usual partners in crime. I've got European Tour expert Paul Williams. Evening to you, Paul.
Evening, Steve.
And we've also got resident guest Barry O'Hanrahan. How are you, Barry?
I'm really good, thanks, guys. How are you both?
Yeah, I'm good, Barry. Good, good, good.
Fair to middling. Fair to middling.
Yeah, a bit accurate.
Yeah. As ever, some housekeeping. Let's crack on. Golfbettingsystem.co.uk. Search golf betting or golf betting tips and you'll find us on the search engine of your choice. Twitter handle, Steve Bamford. That's me. I'm at Bamford Golf. Paul's at Golf Betting. Barry's at A Good Talk Golf. Any podcast this week from you guys, Barry, that you know of?
We'll see how we feel. We're kind of more in the vein of if we have something really juicy to get stuck into these days, we'll give it a rip, but less kind of tied to the weekly tournaments. So, we'll see if we're in the mood to go through a few things.
If Barry does produce one with James this week, we will also link to that podcast here on our Podbean channel. Just a couple more things. iTunes reviews, we're all up for those. And likes and subscribes and follows on Podbean, of course, would be wonderful. I don't really want to focus on last week. Because I felt like slitting my wrists with Bubba Watson. I did get a slither of something back with Phil Mickelson. But I know that my mood is infinitely better than your two moods based on the Oman Open. So, go on, I'll give you guys 45 seconds to take us through the Oman Open.
Okay, yeah, where do we start? I guess, yeah, you bet on these golf tournaments enough to expect these 54-hole derailments every now and again. But we do seem to get in quite a few of them lately, and Matthew Southgate was the most recent one on the list. he got himself into a cracking position. In fact, he got himself to three shots ahead of the field on two separate occasions over the course of the first 3 days, and then went into the final round in the share for the lead, and that was as close as he got. It all started to go horribly wrong on Sunday, and he didn't even place in the end, which is extremely frustrating for a 150-to-1 shot. But there you go. I know you're on him as well, Barry, weren't you?
Yeah. He just went the direction of his surname, didn't he? It's really disappointing. He's a likeable guy as well, so it's kind of you're kind of emotionally torn whether to hate him and break the TV and throw shit at him versus supporting the guy. But when he's in such a great position, you know, the hope builds, and especially when the bet's over 100-to-1 as well. So hopefully it just brings us a little bit of good karma later on in the year to see what happens, I guess.
Yeah, well, let's hope it all evens itself out, as you say. But I think Southgate would be better for the run. I think he'll be stronger for the experience in the longer term. And as you say, he's a likeable chap, and he's clearly got quite a bit about him in terms of his game. So I've not quite given up on him yet. It's just a little frustrating, as you said, Stu.
I think the thing that was really obvious last week to me was that we were told and kind of knew it was a Lynxy style course, and it played that way. And a lot of the guys that are just seem to be almost Lynx specialists or really turn it on when it becomes a Lynx course. Southgate's notorious for it. So it just seems like a really smart guy to have on board at always long odds for these tournaments, and just prepare for the heartbreak when he doesn't get it over the line or even get into the places. Chris Wood, you know, he's gone through a rough patch of form, but has always shown up very well in links courses, and he put in a cracking performance too. So a lot of these guys should be, to bear in mind. Well, I will be anyway throughout the European Tour season, and now that it has more of a kind of a defined stretch of links golf, there's a few guys to have on the short list for those weeks as we go through the year.
Yeah, definitely players you can earmark for these kind of events, and as you say, if you can pick up a decent price on them because their incoming form, like Southgate's was, is pretty poor, then all the better if they do manage to actually get into a paying position at the end of 72 holes.
I'm sure you tipped up Yost as well, didn't you, this season?
Earlier this season? Oh, absolutely, yeah. Abu Dhabi, I think I put him up for. So, yeah, I could see he was, you know, he wasn't far away, Yost, and I tend to be able to read him quite well, but he's been striking the ball very well in his last start in Malaysia. I think he started, it was his previous start, but his putting wasn't quite there. And, you know, when I look at him and I want to see those sparks of some life in his putter combined with his ball striking and then on the right kind of track, it's there. And it didn't have quite enough for me. In fact, I thought last week was going to be slightly lower scoring than it was. So that kind of pushed him out of the equation for me. But 16 under was right where he expected, you expect him to be competing, that kind of mid teens under par. And yeah, he did nothing wrong. Fair play to him.
Thoughts on Bubba for the Masters after yesterday?
I don't think, like, how can you discount him now? Like, he's finally got rid of those stupid Volvic golf balls that are designed to go straight and long and nothing else. So it seems to have just, you know, the ball change combined with whatever else is going on in the background, because it can't just be the ball, but, you know, the ball might have been the catalyst for a whole bunch of things. It just seems to have brought him back to life, you know, and it was just a beautiful show of shot making and, you know, Bubba, like, you want to see him play golf. You know, like him or hate him, just to watch somebody play golf like that is it's a beautiful thing to see. And he's gone back to Augusta where, with, you know, wins in Riviera in 2014 and 2016, backed up by Masters wins in both those years, and now he's gone and done it again on another even year, win in Riviera, and he's going to the Masters in a few weeks, and he's going to be buzzing. So, like, how can you see Bubba outside the top 20 in Augusta now based on the current form?
He's got a great chance. I mean, 66 to 1, you could have got on him at various points during the last 4 days. And, you know, as he's won that tournament yesterday, he's gone down to 28s, 25s in places now. So I managed to pick up a bit of 66 in running myself. So nice little anti-post bet there for Bubba. As you say, there's no reason to suggest that he can't do it. So I thought that was worth a pump.
I know we're going to talk anti-post. I think we're going to pull together a Masters podcast at some point. We might do it this week, listeners, so that's something to keep your ear out for. But just, I'll quickly run through some Masters prices very, very quickly. Dustin Johnson, 8-1. Jordan Spieth, 8-1. These are best prices as we record this. I'm seeing 10-1 with Rory McIlroy, 14s on Jason Day, 16-1 on John Rahm, 18-1 on Ricky Fowler, 20 Justin Thomas, 20 Justin Rose, 28-1 Hideki Matsuyama, and 28-1 Bubba Watson. I mean, that Bubba Watson as well is a larger price with lots of firms than Tiger Woods. Can you believe that, lads? Can you believe that? That's incredible. Absolutely, yeah. Incredible. And this is it. I mean, 66-1 on Bubba Watson in play during the tournament this weekend. And you're seeing now nothing better than 28-1. But even that compared to, say, 18-1 on Ricky Fowler. You know, that 28-1 seems like still seems a half-decent price to me.
Oh, and people have been taking it all the way through today. You know, the start of today, there was still some 33s about. That's all gone. 28s is still there. I wouldn't be surprised to see that all gone by the end of today, tomorrow. And people are piling in. So,
you know, I'm seeing 25-1 about Brooks Koepka, who's injured.
That's bananas. Yes.
That's bananas. It is bananas. Totally bananas. Anyway, let's get on to the two events this week. I'm going to start with the Honda Classic this week. Both of our previews will be available. Both pools for the Qatar Open and mine for the Honda Classic will be available from early tomorrow morning. We'll also be publishing this podcast tomorrow, which is Tuesday as well for listeners. Honda Classic, we've now left the West Coast long behind us and we're across in Florida. We used to have the Florida Swing over four tournaments. It's now foreshortened to three. We start off this week at the Champions Course at PGA National. Then next week, Paul is writing the WGC Mexico Championship tips for next week, because that used to be hosted at Doral in Miami. That's for the second year being hosted on Poana Greens at altitude in Mexico City next week. That's going to be a interesting tournament to get stuck in. Then we move back to Florida for the Valspar Championship at Copperhead. And then the last of the three legs of the Florida swing happen, of course, at Bay Hill for the Arnold Palmer Invitational. And then after that, we're only two events away from the Masters, of course, the WGC Match Play and then the Shell Houston Open. So it isn't far away now, listeners. We are getting very, very close to the first major of 2018. Okay, very, very tough golf course this week, PGA National, the Champions Course. It's traditionally one of the hardest, if not the hardest, par 70 on the PGA Tour. Non-major par 70, that is. The wind tends to blow here. It's within a mile of the Atlantic coast. It features, of course, the famous bear trap, the stretch of holes 15 to 17. It's a Jack Nicklaus design. And when the wind blows and when conditions are firm and fast here, it is a brute of a golf course. Now, the last couple of years here, 2016... that was, if you remember, won by Adam Scott. And 2017 last year was won by Ricky Fowler. We were on Ricky last year. Those two tournaments were fairly unique on the basis that the golf course was quite soft. So the wind was quite strong in 2016, but the course was soft. 2017, conditions were very soft and there wasn't a lot of wind around for the first two to three rounds of the tournament. So we saw a 12 under score with Ricky Fowler last year. I don't think this year is going to be like that though. Florida has been very, very dry. There hasn't been any rain here since the middle of January. Now I know they're water courses and the like, but conditions I think are going to be firm and fast. And we're looking at 20 to 25 mile an hour gusting winds across Thursday, Friday and Saturday. So I think this is going to be a genuine technical high scoring test this week. I don't know the exact target score, but I wouldn't be surprised if we're looking at something around the, say, 6 to 7 under winning it this week.
It generally tends to be that kind of, as you say, unless it's particularly soft, it tends to be that kind of 6 to 9 under level, doesn't it? So
yeah, Fowler was 12 under last year. That was tranquil relatively and it was soft. Scott was 9 under in 2016, which was blowing, but the course itself, ground conditions were soft. Then you go to Padraig Harrington with that shock win in 2015. That was 6 under. Henley 8 under, Michael Thompson 9 under back in 2013. So I think it's going to be around, you know, that 6 to 8 under mark again this week. I think it's going to be a real struggle for the assembled players there this week. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting with this tournament, I always find, that it tends to be one of those PGA Tour events where the actual American contingent is quite small. And it's exactly the same this week. We've got Ricky Fowler, the favourite, at 8 to 1, Justin Thomas 12 to 1, Rory McIlroy 12 to 1, and then the likes of Garcia, Hatton, Gary Woodland, Tommy Fleetwood, Alex Noren, Brian Harman. A lot of the real elite American golfers don't tend to want to get interested in this tournament because I think it is such a hard US Open type affair. What do you guys make of the Honda Classic? Is it one of the tournaments that you like to watch each year?
Well, both freeze and pause. I enjoy it. I enjoy seeing a good strong test of golf. I think it'll be interesting to see back to back weeks in the PGA Tour where the winning score will be pretty low compared to other events on the PGA Tour we see throughout the year. I mean, we've got the hype of the bear trap as well, which always helps, you know. And we'll have a lot of Jack stories, and history about Jack throughout the week as well, which is nice. You know, because, well, we didn't grow up when he was playing golf, so you get a little hark back to the history of golf. So it's a nice week to watch golf, and it'll also help shape some thoughts on, you know, guys for maybe the U.S. Open, you know, a little later in the season, which also will present extremely difficult and testing conditions, and similar kind of skill sets will be needed for to get anywhere in the U.S. Open. So a good little early indicator as well for later on in the year.
Yeah, it's certainly an interesting tournament because it's against a lot of the birdie fests that you see on the PGA Tour, you're getting a proper test. And as you say, a lot of the Americans stay away from it. It's got a very European feel, particularly towards the kind of top to middle part of the market. So, looking forward to it.
Well, this is it. This is Garcia's first PGA Tour event this year. Hatton's come across. Fleetwood's playing his second week in the row in the States, as is Alex Noren. You've then got the likes also further down of Cabrera Bello, of course, is a PGA Tour guy now, but clearly European Tour. Dylan Fratelli's come across, and we've also got the likes of Benny Ann and G-Max playing, Thomas Peters. It's got a very European Tour feel to it, even Bernd Wiesberger. And a name that has caught my eye, I don't know if it's a kind of guy that would interest you two. I know that he's played on some Florida swing courses in the past and done quite well. Kiridesh Afibanrat, who I'm seeing right now at 90-1 for this. That's an interesting name, I think.
Yeah, he had a great end to 2017, and then he was a bit sluggish at the start of this year after the Eurasia Cup, and he's got his act together now. One in Perth a fortnight ago, or a week and a half ago. So he's in decent nick, hitting a lot of greens. Afibanrat, a lot of greens. So.
Tiger Woods is playing as well, 80-1. I'm seeing with Coral right now. They're 7 places each way, 50 odds. They've gone 7 places each way for this golf tournament, as have Boyle Sports as well. So if you're interested in Tiger, who has finished runner-up here in the past, and we know that he's got an excellent Florida record, you've only got to look at results across Doral and also, of course, at Bay Hill. Local resident in Jupiter, Florida. So Woods available. Anything I'm seeing at the moment from 50 up to a maximum of 80-1 this week. It is, I don't know, I've written in my preview, lads, that this is a very specialised event. And I'll just read you through some past winners here. Camilo Villegas, he won here, and he'd already finished 9th in the US Open. Rory McIlroy had won the US Open the year before he won here. Then you get to crazy names like Michael Thompson, who'd done absolutely nothing before arriving at this golf course in that season. But he'd finished 2nd at the US Open, played the previous year. Russell Henley in 2014, he had finished at Pebble Beach, the US Open there. He'd finished 16th as an amateur, so he had a little bit of US Open pedigree. Paddy Harrington was a crazy 300-1 price, something along those lines. He, of course, has 3 top 5 finishes at the US Open. Adam Scott has finished 4th and 9th at the US Open before winning this. And even last year, Ricky Fowler has finished 10th and 2nd in US Opens before he won this golf tournament. So for me, that US Open link is something that you cannot really walk away from. I've looked for my selection this week. I really do want guys that are hitting the ball particularly well right here and right now. So I was looking for greens in regulation from their last appearance. Now, that doesn't work for the likes of Paddy Harrington, but then he was in such bad form before arriving here. I think you'd have needed some kind of Mystic Meg glass to be able to predict that he was going to win that tournament that week. If you remember, he beat Daniel Berger in a playoff 3 years ago.
And he kind of chips and putts. It wasn't a ball striking week from memory. It was,
nah. But you can do that around here. That is the issue here. The skill sets I'm looking for this are quite specialised. I'm looking for guys that can hit the ball close from long distance. I'm also looking for guys that have been putting recently quite well. And I'm also, sand is a big feature on this golf course. So if you've got the ability in terms of being able to save par from bunkers as well, that is a huge upside at this tournament. Because, as you know, this is very typical compared to what we saw last week at Riviera. This isn't going to be one of those 88% greens in regulation weeks. With the wind howling, I think anything around the kind of 67-68% greens in regulation this week is going to be a very, very strong effort. So everybody is going to find themselves scrambling. And if you can't scramble or save yourself from the sand, there's drop shots and bogeys and doubles to be had. And of course, this course is a typical Florida design, features lots and lots of water. I've got two names that I can confidently say that I'm tipping up this week. I'll take you through the longer price first before I go down the line of the shorter price that I'm tipping up. I'm just checking his price as we actually talk at the moment. I am going for, and I was very, very pleasantly surprised to see the form that this guy was in last week. I'm seeing 70-1 this week about Graham McDowell, who I think is an absolute must back this week after his very, very good form at Riviera last week. I was very surprised to see G-Mac get into contention at Riviera. Of course, he's never really done particularly much on. But he mentioned in some interview, I think it was an interview after round two, where he'd shot a 5-under 66, saying that his recent 3 to 4 months has all been about process and trying to embed a swing that's going to be more consistent. And you could see that last week. I know that up until Saturday, he was third for greens in regulation. He was hitting his usual standard amount of fairways, which is always strong. But his record at this particular event and his record in Florida, of course, he's an Orlando, Florida resident. His record at this tournament and in Florida is excellent, and it's something that I can't really avoid. If you go to the WGC at Doral, he's finished 6th, 3rd, and 9th there, of course, in fields that are absolutely stacked with quality. He's also done very well at Bay Hill, finishing 2nd there on 2 occasions, once in 05 and also once in 2012 rather, when he finished 2nd to Tiger Woods. And his record at this tournament is particularly eye-catching. 6th in 2011, 9th in 2012, 9th in 2013 and 5th in 2016. I think that Graham McDowell at 70-1 with Betfred, they're 6 places 50 odds this week, Betfred. I think that's a bet that I'm going to definitely take on this week, I think, with GMAC. It was noticeable that he really did come to the party last week at Riviera, and I just think that the conditions, the wind, the firmness of the golf course, I just think it might play into GMAC's hands this week.
I think the other thing to consider with GMAC is the Ryder Cup, and you know it's going to affect an awful lot of players this year and their motivation. But given that he's won twice around Le Golf National in the past, he'll be desperate to get into that team. And if he's going to get into the team, he's going to have to do it through some fantastic results over the next 6 months or so. So yeah, you could see there was a marked improvement in his form last week, and. I don't know, we shall see.
What are your thoughts, Barry, on GMAC from your side of the Irish Sea? Do you think that his game fits into what we're thinking are going to be the circumstances this week?
Oh, for sure, yeah. I mean, the fact that the course is playing firm and fast will be to his benefit, because he struggles for distance off the tee. So he's going to get 3 yards this week to chew up a few yards off the tee on that golf course. So he'll get great confidence from that. you know, it was great to see that ball, you know, he's also coming in the back of a really good ball striking week. I think you can put the Sunday performance yesterday down to the fact that it's been a while since he's been in that position, so he's getting all these feelings and, you know, that those sensations he just hasn't had in a while. So, you know, he's got that 1 week of experience in that back under the belt, and he'll feel great having put himself in that position. Obviously, he'll be disappointed to have, you know, backtracked yesterday, but he's well experienced enough to be able to put that behind him very quickly and use it to his advantage this week. So I think it's a really, really good shout. And let's go GMAC. It'd be great. I mean, it's crap to see a golfer that, you know, we've supported for so long, well, particularly from the Irish side of things, run into, you know, some really difficult times in his game and tumble down the rankings. So it's really good to see you know, glimpses of light of a resurgence of a very popular golfer and very cool guy going back up. So fingers crossed.
Can you believe he's 208th in the world rankings at the moment? Yeah. It was interesting from last week. These were the numbers after 54 holes, yeah? So not taking into account Sunday. And just to put some meat on the bones of what you were saying there, Barry, that was the first time in 27 months that Graham had been in the last two groups on a Sunday, felt that real pressure. And it told, you could see that. But that doesn't necessarily mean that a man of his calibre and of his ability and, you know, the experiences he's had as of being an elite golfer. You know, you look at his record, you can tell with Graham that once he actually finds something in his game, he's one of these guys that can link tournaments together week after week. So these were his numbers after 54 holes last week. He was fifth for fairways. He was third for greens in regulation. He was fourth for proximity to the pin. He was, interestingly enough, a fifth for strokes gained off the tee, because he was actually banging it over 300 yards last week off the tee. So that's interesting. He was also fourth for strokes gained around the green, and he was second for strokes gained tee to green. So, you know, just from those numbers, you could see that his performance last week for those first 54 holes was fantastic. It really was. So that's kind of why I'm involved with him this week. I just think that if you're looking further down the market, you're looking for a little bit of value at a specialised test, and we know that he's got, of course, the 2010 US Open champion. He's also got another US Open top, I think it was top five. I'm trying to remember where he finished in another US Open. It was definitely a top five finish that he's got as well as that. Let me just check. Yeah, he was second, of course, in 2012. So, you know, someone with that kind of US Open and Open Championship history, I think this week could be made for him. Before I go to my shorter price, which is a lot more obvious, have you guys got any thoughts or any players that have caught your imagination looking into this?
I have a couple. All kind of mid odds, and one I suppose is a bit longer. The first one is Jason Duffner. So Duffman has had three pretty decent events early on this season, and he's got a 14th and a 17th here in the last 3 years. He's pretty decent in the wind. When he gets the long game going, it's good. His stats for the long game haven't been great this year, but his putting's been really good. So that's the thing we always worry about with Duffner, the putting. So, you know, if he can pull the long game together and match that up to the putting, I think he could be a pretty decent shout this week. And he's available around the place for about 55-1, I think.
Yeah, 65-1, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm okay with that. So I've put a little bet on Duffner.
And he's got great US Open record, isn't he?
Yeah. So I think it all matches up quite well, and it's a decent value bet. Hopefully he can go well. Another one who kind of caught my eye is Russell Knox. So Russell can definitely play in the wind, having grown up in Scotland. You know, he's had a nice stretch of tournaments, five tournaments in a row there recently, finishing with a 15th. Only one missed cut, but the rest are all inside the top 30. Had a weak break last week, and, you know, last year he missed a cut here, which I'm not too worried about, because before that he had a 26th, a 2nd and a 3rd. So he's gone back to a place where he feels really comfortable and matched up to some pretty decent form and good tournament form. I think he's a pretty nice player to take on this week. He's a little short on the odds because of all those factors I'm mentioning, but you can get him at up to 50 and 55 to 1. So
just to back you up on that, these are full field greens in regulation ranks. So what I do, I record greens in regulation across all the PGA Tour and European Tour events. And I know that you see this information. Russell Knox at the moment is top of my greens in regulation 10-week window. And that's backed by, these are full field ranks. So this is where he finished in the field of the weeks of the tournaments. You said 5 weeks straight. He was 7th, 9th, 8th, 11th and 11th for greens in regulation. 5 weeks on the trot. So there is a guy that is hitting greens for fun. And he's finished second here twice, doesn't he, from memory?
Second and a third, just looking at the sheet there. So it adds up pretty nicely. You'd like a few more points on him, maybe 66 to 1, you'd feel a little bit happier. But, if you can grab him at 50 to 1, all the stats point to hopefully a good week for him. And finally, just a quick one. Jimmy Walker disappointed me last week, but I've managed to snag him at 125 to 1 on Skybet, who are playing 8 places. So I that's by far the market leader price, and I get 8 places on him. So willing to take a punt on Jimmy, who is working hard on his game. Stats haven't really come together yet so far. He's brutal off the tee. But if he can just kind of sharpen that up a little bit, you never know what can happen. He's also won on Bermuda grass before, so a bit of familiarity, and it's all built into the price that he hasn't really performed so well in a while.
Jimmy's a fantastic win player as well, isn't he? It's interesting, because he was in the top 10 here after 54 holes last year, and he went backwards on Sunday. So he clearly gets on well with the course. So I think that's a big triple-digit price there. For a player who clearly you and I both backed last week and did nothing, he's the kind of sort that will bob up definitely this week.
Well, that's why I put my money on him straight away. I said I'm not letting him slip. We tend to do that quite a bit as punters. You back a guy, he burns you, and you go, that's it, I'm done with you forever. And the very next week, he pops up and wins.
Southgate's bound to win this week.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I'd back him in anything he's doing this week. If he's ordering a McDonald's, I think he'll be successful in that. So,
as sure as yin follows yang, Jimmy Walker will be in the mix this week. I guarantee it. Absolutely guarantee it. Any thoughts from you, Paul, before we quickly move on to Qatar, and I'll quickly take you through my last tip.
Yes, there's one player who caught my eye, I'll go down the list of things that he's done, and I'll see if you can guess him before I get to him. So he's finished first in total driving on two of his last three starts. Was third for putting in one of those. He's made his last 6 cuts in this event. He's been a runner-up. He's lost out in a playoff here. He's got a couple of wins on Bermuda. He's finished 5th on a Jack Nicklaus major course in his career. He's finished 2nd on his penultimate start.
And you know who this is, don't you, Barry? Barry, tell me you know this, because I think I do, but I want to put Barry on the spot. Go on, right? Go on, Barry.
Oh, man.
Second. Come on, he was second a few weeks ago. Come on.
And Steve nearly gave it away there with his when he called you in there, Barry. I'll put you out of your misery. He's not won since 2010, which is why his 80s won. Ryan Palmer.
Yeah.
Now, I might be setting myself up for another Southgate-style fall here, because Ryan can get a little bit flaky on a Sunday. But, you look at the raw numbers associated with it. He is playing well. He's got some form here. He's got some recent. He missed the cut the week after finishing 2nd at Torrey, but you kind of expect that with these players. They put everything into trying to win a tournament, and don't quite get there, and you kind of have an off week the week after. But
and he can he can play in the wind as well.
Yeah, oh, yeah, very good wind player.
Texan man, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot to like, and 80 to 1, I mean, the market's still coming up. If someone goes 100 to 1, I might have to dive in for a little top up on that as well. But
These are my thoughts on the top of the market. Ricky Fowler, 8 to 1, that's a definite no-no. His record when defending is brutally bad, and for a guy that doesn't tend to win a lot, 8 to 1 is just non-negotiable. You just can't go there at all. I think Rory at 12s will probably be a popular bet, especially after his quick or his fast finish at the end of Riviera yesterday. For me, though, he's just not hitting enough greens where you can see the real Rory, if you see what I mean. I think with Rory, if you see him hitting tons and tons of greens, you just know that the putter's going to warm after that and it all starts to follow logically. At the moment, I'm not seeing Rory anywhere close to the top 20 of my greens and regulation tracker. So I still think he's very inconsistent on a number of his approaches. I mean, I noticed last week, with wedge in hand, he's missing greens on Thursday. You know, a couple of times he did that, and that isn't Rory McIlroy at all. I just think he's not quite there at the moment. He's still, don't forget, it's only his fourth start since coming back from injury, so we expect so much from these elite guys. The guy I'm going for, though, I'm ignoring Sergio. I have got a feeling that Tyrrell Hatton's going to go well again here this week. But I'm going really, really boring. I'm going Justin Thomas this week. I think 12-1's available at Coral. He's ticking every statistic that I want to see. He hasn't won for 4 months, which for him is a big or a long period of time. He was third here a couple of years ago when he was playing very, very poorly. And the thing I always look for with Justin is that when he starts hitting tons and tons of greens, he tends to inevitably win very, very quickly. And last week, he was sixth for greens in regulation, if you were taking in terms of the whole field. He was actually, where is he? He was actually fifth for greens in regulation of those that made the cut. So for me, I can see Justin Thomas going very, very well at PGA National this week. I'm going to take the 12-1. On the basis that of the top three in the betting, I think that's going to have the best chances of winning this week.
Can see him going well, definitely.
Yeah, he's a good wind player. Played very well in the wind over at in South Korea when he won that at 9-under, and he won at Quail Hollow as well. Don't forget the PGA Championship at 8-under, so he can grind and he can win tournaments when the scoring's very high. Right, Qatar Open. Let's quickly fire through that.
Yeah, I'll take you through it quick. Qatar Open, Doha Golf Club, they've hosted this since 1998. So we've got an awful lot of course history to go through this week, which is nice. So Peter Haradine design, 7,400-yard par 72 in the desert. It kind of produces a similar kind of winning score each year. It's around that kind of 15 to 18 under type level. So it's scorable without it getting completely out of control. The main defence of the course tends to be the wind, and it does get quite windy. It's very exposed. And even if you're seeing a weather forecast of 5, 10, 15 miles an hour, it tends to be exacerbated quite heavily. So if you look down the winners list, going all the way back to 1998, there's an awful lot of wind positive and lynx positive players who've appeared on that, who've won the tournament. So Brandon Grace has won it twice in the last 3 years. Sergio Garcia, Paul Laurie won it in 2012, clearly an ex-Open champion. Thomas Bjorn, who's fantastic in the wind. You can go back all the way through. Ernie Els won it before that. There's a lot of correlation there with Lynx Golf. So even though we're in the desert, again, similar to last week and similar to something you picked up on earlier, Barry, there's these players who tend to perform better in these events where there's some kind of correlation to a Lynx track in some shape or form. So it'd be interesting to see how different it ends up being to last week in terms of the leaderboard. Clearly there's going to be slightly different field assembled, and it's a shame really, because actually we had the likes of Joost Luiten and Alex Levy and Beef. They were all penciled into play this, and each one of them's pulled out during the course of the day or as of yesterday. So we're left with a pretty sparse field, and to be honest, compared to some Qatar Masters events that we've had in the past, it is pretty poor. So you got Thorbjørn Olsen, who leads the way at 16-1 generally, Andy Sullivan, Chris Wood, and last year's winner Yingwen Wang All around the 22 to 1 kind of mark. So
he burned you badly last week, didn't he, old Wang?
Yeah.
Useless.
Well, he put a decent final round in 4 under and got himself to respectability, but he was never anywhere near it, really. So again, no doubt he'll have a decent week.
I saw Mike Miller on Twitter today saying that 8-1 virtually gave him a heart attack on Ricky Fowler, and I'm having the same reaction here to 14-1 on Teodor Bjørn Olsen. That's incredibly short.
Olsen might go and win this, and you know he's more than capable of doing it. But he's not the kind of player who wins at 14 or 16-1, is he? He's the kind of player who wins at 18.
He doesn't string results together of any sort or form, does he?
No, I can't go anywhere near him, I must say. Andy Sullivan's playing some better golf, that's for sure. Wang, in the one event that he's defended so far in his career, that he's won more events and hasn't gone back for the next year for whatever reason. But the one he has defended, he missed the cut on. So that kind of puts me off a little bit there. Sullivan's playing well, as you say. If I'm going to take one from the top, and I suspect I probably will, I'm going to sleep on it and then obviously publish in the morning, then it would be Chris Wood. Now, Wood came back from 3 consecutive missed cuts to finish second last week. And that's, again, the first time for a little while that he's got himself into contention. And as you were saying, similar to GMAC, you sometimes need those competitive juices to start flowing, to get yourself right in the right in the mindset to go and take one of these tournaments by the scruff of the neck. Because in the end, Wood... it didn't so much let Loughton through at the end, but there wasn't a great deal of pressure, and Loughton can be a little bit flaky when it gets towards the end of these tournaments as well. So with a little bit more pressure exerted on him, it might have been a different result. But I like Chris Wood. I think he's playing. He clearly played well last week. He's got great links pedigree if we're going to consider that for this week. He's won here in Qatar before. He's back with his old coach as well, and it's interesting that he's kind of reforced that partnership with his previous coach, and he's seen some instant results. So I'm interested to see how he goes this week. 22-1 compared to last week where you were getting 80s. It clearly puts into context what he did in the from 3 missed cuts to nearly winning a golf tournament. But there's not a great deal of quality in this event, and
he's the sort that can string results together as well, isn't he? I'm just seeing that patch in autumn 2015, 4th at the Dunhill Links, 9th at the British Masters, 2nd at the Portugal Masters, and then 5th at the Turkish Airlines Open.
He does string events together, and I've backed Wood a number of times in the past, and my observation of him, it tends to be that when it's a tougher track or it's one that's coastal windy, one where there's a reason why people may struggle tends to be where he comes to the fore. Now, this isn't a particularly tough track because you're still going to get to a kind of mid-teens under par, but it can be windy. It is likely to be windy. There's going to be, the forecast is kind of 10 to 15 mile an hour winds in the afternoon. Sunday is likely to be the windiest day of the lot, 20 miles an hour. And when it's blowing 20 miles an hour around Doha, it's actually pretty severe. You see some of the old footage of when Thomas Bjorn won. It was blowing an absolute gale, and he was knocking his shots down to win 3 feet of the pin. It was a great performance back in 2010, 2011, whenever he did that. And I don't think it's going to be quite as severe as that. But even so, it's not going to be straightforward, particularly when push comes to shove on Sunday afternoon. So someone who can handle those conditions, it could be the one who gets over the line on Sunday if they're in contention. So Wood of the shorter prices for me. Some mid-price players that I'm looking at, Pablo Larrafabel. I missed out on Loughton, who's one of my favourites last week, and Larrafabel's another one I tend to back quite a bit, but he's another great wind player. And if you go back to a couple of events ago, he finished where was it?
Third.
I take it you're backing him, Baron.
I have already. Just everything matches up quite nicely.
Yeah, it does. He produced a 14 under weekend, bogey free that weekend to finish himself in third. So clearly playing well, he's played this track a lot. He's played here 10 times. He's got a best of 13th, but you know when he's on his game, he can win this kind of event. And there's nothing really there in front of him to scare him, I don't think.
That's what interests me. He seems to kind of come. His wins have taken advantage of slightly less than stellar fields, and they've all been his four wins on the European Tour have been 15 under, 16 under, 14 under, and 17 under, and one in this part of the world, which is the Abu Dhabi. So, yeah, it all kind of adds up quite nicely for me. And he's such a likable guy as well. He's really entertaining to watch. It just you wish he'd win more because he's so talented. But yeah, 50 to one this week. It's fun. Plus the good thing.
50 to one. Yeah, for a mid-price player, that's I think you're gonna have a decent run for your money from Pablo.
Fingers crossed. Yeah. Well, he's hitting 75% greens in regulation this year, which is outstanding. So,
and if you go back to Malaysia where he finished third, it was 86. So he's striking the ball fantastically. And one of the toughest parts of this track are the par threes. So if you're hitting with regularity, your greens and your irons are doing it particularly well, then you're gonna tear apart these par threes. So I'm quite excited to see how he goes this week. There's a few more kind of shortlisted. Jordan Smith striking the ball well again, and Sean Crocker again. He's hitting lots of greens in regulation. One of those two may well find their way in. Sam Brazil as well, the Australian. He's got some progressive form, so he's 125 to 1. So yeah. I'm just gonna sleep on some of these decisions and see where I go. But that's kind of where my thinking is at the moment.
I've noticed Brazil's been levitating or gravitating up leaderboards recently.
Yeah, if you go back to when he won in Hong Kong, his incoming form was almost identical to where it is now. And the catalyst eventually was that he found some really good putting form just before he went to Hong Kong. And, he won at a tasty price. And it was something like 1.63. Putts per GIR in his last start, which again is that kind of sign that says, well, he's just about ready. And say 125 to 1 at the moment, clearly has won on Bermuda greens in the past, given that he won that Hong Kong Open at Fanling. So there's a lot to like about him. 39 years old. I didn't realise he was that old until I looked him up.
No, I thought he was younger than that.
Yeah, I had in my mind. So clearly a journeyman who's been around, and that's his one and only win. But perhaps he'll get more before he knocks it on the head.
Any others you like the look of, Barry, quickly?
No, I'm not going to get too much further involved. Rathbone jumped off the page for me, and I think I'm going to stick with him.
Okay, that's great. We've got a fantastic event to look forward to next week. The first WGC, which they're playing, of course, at Mexico City. I know that there's a couple of high-profile guys that aren't going to be there, but in the main, we're going to have the cream of the crop there next week. And I know that's something that Paul's putting together in terms of his preview for next week. So we've got a big tournament to look forward to next week, guys. Thank you for your time. It was much appreciated. And thank you for listening. We will see you again next week for the Golf Betting System podcast. Thanks, and see you again soon.